Welcome back to the Purple Menace Podcast. Billy Wessels here, joined as always by Clint Foster. And today on the phone we have Horned Frog legend Jason Phillips. How you doing today, Jason?
Doing good, man. Appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah, no problem. Clint, how are you today? I should have introduced you. You're sitting at the table.
I'm doing just fine. Thanks, Billy.
You're not important. Let's get that taken care of. You're not as important as Jason is.
Well, the greatest player to ever wear number 39 in all of TCU athletics, according to us, the experts.
Yeah, the experts here, which I think is fair. Jason, I know I kind of teased you that info the other day. What does that mean to you, the fact that we're not retiring these numbers, but the fact that how important you were wearing that 39?
First of all, you guys nailed it. but it's awesome, man. I mean, TCU being what it has been to me in my life and the school it is and the university and the program it is, I mean, it's a huge honor, obviously, you know, but it's always awesome to get a, you know, reminisce, talk back about TCU, talk to you guys, and just go back and think about my days playing there.
Yeah, you know, Jason, for those of you who don't remember his playing days, one of the first of a long line, obviously, of really, really great linebackers, and one of the first who was a quarterback in high school. So, Jason, can you talk a little bit about what your recruitment was like, and was Coach P up front about switching you to linebacker, and then what was that transition like?
Coach P and them are well known for taking guys at different positions and moving them around, and I had actually gone through the whole recruit process. I grew up down by A&M, and so I kind of was a big Aggie guy for a long time, and I never really got recruited by them, and at the time, you know, that bothered me a little bit, but TCU came in, offered me, and he was pretty upfront. You know, he was like, we're looking at you at fullback, running back, linebacker-ish, you know, something else other than quarterback, and I was just appreciative of the fact that he was open and honest about it. You know, he didn't try to come in and recruit me and say, hey, yeah, you know, we're going to bring you in, and we're going to bring in another quarterback, and we'll let you guys figure it out. He was pretty open and said, look, you know, you're not a quarterback, or at least not for us, you will be, but you can be something else. And like I said, I always appreciated that. And so being able to go to TCU and win the games we won there, and, you know, obviously during that time, whenever I was at TCU, A&M was pretty down. So, it all worked out in the end. But it goes back to Coach P and his guys and how they've always been able to recruit players and turn them into the kind of football players they want to see on the field at TCU.
Yeah, it worked out pretty good for you, linebacker. Is there a play in your playing days at TCU that really sticks out in your mind, like a play that you made or a play that someone else made that just is ingrained in your mind?
Game I ever played, that OU win we had up there in Norman, when Adrian Peterson was trying to get, you know, his 2,000 yards when he was at, it was the first game of the season, but he was trying to get 2,000 yards total for his career at Oklahoma at the time. But I don't even remember what happened. I just remember we were lined up, and I saw an opening, ran through, grabbed Adrian Peterson, and that's just one of those plays that if I'm always looking back at my career, I just remember that as kind of the kickoff to my career. But it was also cool because I was tacking Adrian Peterson, you know what I mean? And it was in front of everybody. And so we got the win there at Norman. But that one play, I think it was one of the first plays I ever had at linebacker. But that one sticks out to me probably more than any, just because probably who I was tackling. But either way.
Yeah, he was obviously a monster deal, like, later in his career and everything like that, going pro. At the time, what was his like? I was at that game also as a student, but like, I don't remember the aura being around him as great as it obviously has become.
No, he burst on the scene as a freshman. I think he rushed for he had really good freshman year.
He was a Heisman finalist as a freshman.
Yeah, I mean, he was on that's why he was trying to get that 2,000 yards in that first game of his second season, because I think he almost got it in his original his freshman year season. And yeah, he was good from high school up. I remember him playing at Palestine and watching him play, and he was just an icon from the day he was in high school till the day he retired. So getting to start out playing against him was cool.
Well, Jason, one of your iconic moments for a lot of Frog fans actually didn't come on the field. It was from a promotional photo shoot when there was some blood streaming down your face. For those of you who might remember this shot, you want to let people in on the story behind that?
Yeah, I've gotten this a few times ever since that story happened. But we were just doing a little photo shoot, and they were putting like dirt and mud on our face, like spraying water on us to make us look like we were sweating. And I remember we did it, and the photographer just kind of said, man, this is awesome, this is great. He's like, I wish we had a little fake blood or something to put on there. And as you guys know, I have a really big nose. I broke it a few times, and my helmet used to hit it constantly. I mean, there was always a cut on the top of it. And so I just took a little plastic knife that was over at the little table where they had some coffee, and I just kind of cut that scar, that scab, and so it bled really good. It looked really good. It got a little blown out of proportion because it wasn't a very big cut. But, I mean, it looked cool, so I'll take it.
Man, what did the photographer do when you go grab a knife and take it to your nose?
That was actually the funniest part, because it was almost like he was like, no, no, no. He didn't want to be liable for me doing that. And before he could say anything, I got it cut. But after I had it done, he was like, well, it's on there now. Let's go ahead and get the shot.
That's awesome, man. Obviously, we just had the draft last week. A bunch of frogs got taken. What is your draft story? Do you remember? Obviously, I'm assuming you remember what it was like when you got the call from Baltimore.
Oh, yeah. I actually did not have a good draft story, man. You know, I went into the combine. I was, I think, the number two or number three inside linebacker on everybody's board. I mean, I was probably a third-round guy, maybe creeping into second. And then went to the combine, blew my knee out, you know. And after that, didn't even hear from any teams. I had about 28 meetings set up. And then after I had my surgery, I had three, I think. So I wasn't expected to really even get drafted on draft day. I was sitting around. I was watching it, but I really wasn't paying attention, because the more I saw linebackers getting taken off the board, it was eating at me, because it was just making me mad. And so I really wasn't even watching the draft. Me and my dad were just kind of sitting around the backyard. I had my phone with me, though. And so my phone rang, and I saw Baltimore. I knew Baltimore had liked me from the get-go. They were one of the few teams that actually kept my meeting after I blew my knee out. And so when I got on the phone, it was Ozzie, and he just kind of said, hey, you know, we got the next pick coming up. Just want to let you know we're about to take you, as long as, I think it was Miami was in front of them, doesn't take you first. And so I said, awesome. And sure enough, I didn't get taken by Miami, so they went ahead and made the call and went to Baltimore for a little while and got to play with Ray Lewis and Ed Reed, so that was awesome.
Yeah, did you have a story, like a PG-13 story you can say about Ray Lewis and Ed Reed?
Man, well, you know, Ray was, he was awesome to play with, because, you know, you heard all the stories and you watched him play for so long, but man, he was a true professional. I mean, it made me grow up a little bit, honestly, because I was watching the way he acted and the way he attacked film and the questions he asked in the meetings and the way he would kind of snap at guys that weren't paying attention in the meetings. It made me kind of say, okay, this is the greatest one to ever do it, and he's detail-oriented, and he takes notes, and he asks questions, and he's not afraid to be wrong. And so, I don't really have one specific story, but just being able to watch him be a professional was pretty awesome.
For sure. I mean, you mentioned Ray's one of the best to ever do it in the National Football League, and like we were talking about earlier, there's been a lot of really great linebackers in the Coach P era, some before you, but a lot since you. Besides yourself, who would you say are the two greatest linebackers you've seen in the Coach P era? A lot of them end up on this list.
You know, the one that comes to mind that I remember watching when I was my first year here as a fullback, just because I was watching old tapes of some of the fullbacks that played before me, was a guy named LaMarcus McDonald.
Oh, yeah. Wow. LMC.
And L-Mac was real. I mean, he was probably, when it comes down, I know we've had a lot of great guys come through, but LaMarcus was one of the guys that I remember watching on film, and I even before I really knew anything about linebacker or how to play linebacker at TCU, I remember watching him on film and thinking, man, this guy's a different player, because he played in the backfield. I mean, he was just everywhere. And then besides L-Mac, you know, David Hawthorne was a big part of my career at TCU, and then even my NFL career after, because he played 9 or 10 years. I don't know if I could pick another one, you know, because DH is big in there. Daryl Washington, you know, Tank was right there behind us. But if I had to go with one off of just pure athleticism, it would probably be Daryl Washington, just because I remember watching him do some things on the field that I didn't think linebackers could do. I remember him going out in the summertime when we had like 7-on-7, and he would go play with the corners and he would guard the receivers, and you're not supposed to be able to do that as a linebacker. So,
yeah.
You know, just remember watching the way Daryl Washington could run and play. He was a different specimen himself.
He was a physical freak for sure.
So after your time in Baltimore, got picked up at Carolina. Were you there? Did you cross paths with Luke Kuechly, or was he a little bit after you?
Yeah, man. Luke actually. So my first year in Carolina was me, John Beeson, Thomas Davis, some of those guys. And at the end of that year, they let John Beeson go. So I was looking at it like, all right, man, I'm probably going to get my chance. You know, the top guy's gone. I got a chance to compete for a starting position. And I was watching the draft that year. And Cleveland traded up to get Johnny Manziel that year, I believe. And it ended up And we were talking to guys afterwards. They said they wanted Johnny Manziel. So when he came off the board, their next pick was Luke. So then I had to think, all right, I'm going to get to start this year. And I was watching the draft, and with the first pick, they select the best linebacker in college football. And so he came in, and, at first I was still had a competitive mindset. I was like, he's a kid. He's still got the line. I'll be able to at least compete. But that guy was different too, man. He was a different type of football player. He was really good. He really humble. He played every snap. He practiced every snap. So once I saw him get out there and play, I knew I was going to be a backup and a special teams guy, but I was okay.
Is there a play from your NFL career that really sticks with you to this day?
Yeah, I had a I was running down on kickoff one time. It was right after it was in a playoff game against Denver, I believe. But Demaryius Thomas was returning kicks, and I remember when we had watched film, I kind of asked our special teams coach, I was like, is he really going to return kicks? He's 6'4". Usually those guys get, crushed. And he said, yeah, no, he's going to get back there and do it. And so he went to return the kick, and I slipped the block, and I nailed him right in the hip. And I'm pretty sure he had to – and I wasn't trying to hurt him, but I'm pretty sure he had to get surgery on his hip. And it was just one of those big hits that I remember preparing for all week, and it actually happened. So it was kind of pretty cool in that aspect.
Satisfying in a way. So nowadays, what are you up to now? What's going on in your life?
Man, I working for BSN Sports. I do business development. We supply uniforms, athletic apparel, equipment to high schools and colleges all over the state. And my job is to basically go in and talk with the coaches and just find a way I can help them, whether it's rebranding their school, whether it's talking to their players and kind of talking to them about my story and kind of giving them some of the lessons I learned the hard way, whether it's going in and talking with those defensive coaches and talking to them a little bit about my experience of working with Coach P and running the 4-2-5 defense. And it's been awesome so far, man. It gives me a chance to get out and help guys like Coach P and guys like my dad, high school coaches that really do a lot to affect the lives of kids every day. And so it gives me a chance to work with all of them, but also get to stay around the football aspect of it. And I still get to be around coaches and I get to be around athletes, which is what I really like to do.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned spending some time working with Coach P. How was it different, if at all, playing for Coach P versus coaching with Coach P?
Everybody the same way. He's going to push you to be the best, and it don't matter if you're a freshman or if you're a 20-year coach that's working with him. But I did learn. I knew Coach P worked hard when I was playing for him. It was obvious that he was a grinder. He was a guy that just put his nose down and went to work. But when I coached there and I was behind the scenes and I was in the 10-hour film sessions and I was watching him come up with solutions to problems that on film that I didn't think you could solve, in my opinion, watching it on film, I was like, yeah, we're not going to be able to get that done. And he could come up with ways to get it coached up and get it taught. And I just learned how good he really was when I was coaching there. Like I said, I knew how good he was playing, but when I started coaching for him, I saw all the little things and I saw the amount of time he put into it. I saw, a lot of coaches out there love their kids, don't get me wrong, but Coach P really, he's one of the few coaches I've been around that actually really cares about the guys that play for him. He wants to see them do good on and off the field. And I don't think you can say that about a lot of coaches in today's game.
Did that give you somehow more appreciation for what it was like playing for him as well, seeing him on the other side?
100%, 100%. I mean, like I said, once I was trying to write the package up that we were, get handed out to the players instead of just getting handed to it, I learned how much time and effort those guys put into it every day. So it was a great experience for me because coming out of football, a lot of guys aren't really sure, what you want to do. Do you want to coach? Do you want to try something else? So being able to just go in there and be around guys I was comfortable with and to make that transition while watching the way Coach P attacked his day every day just got me so much, just really taught me how to attack the day as an adult, I guess you could say, after playing ball.
Well, Jason, I don't know how religiously you're still watching the Frogs now. Of course, these last 2 years. Oh, you are? Okay. good. Us too. So, obviously, these last 2 years, there have been struggles for various reasons. What do you kind of see as, let's just assume it's a regular season this year, no COVID problems, we play, 12 regular season games, all that. What do you kind of expect out of the Frogs this coming season?
My expectations for the Frogs are always high because that's where they should be. With Coach Patterson, he's always going to have high expectations. So I think it's safe and it's fair for the fans to have high expectations. That being said, I know they've had a rough couple years. I mean, last year they really didn't have a great quarterback. They lost, what, 6 or 7 games within the touchdown. But the program itself is still producing those really good players, those really good, you know, really high character players, and just good football players. I mean, you can look at the draft this year. You know, we had 2 guys taking the first. I think we had 5 total taken. The Gary Patterson program is still producing the same type of athletes. They just got to find a way to get that extra 7 points where they were, you know, they lost a few games within 7 points. They got to find that quarterback that's going to rally that team when they need it. You know, I think they found that, you know, throughout the year last year. So, yeah, you know, my expectations are always going to stay high, but that's just because I know Coach P is setting his own expectations high. So, like I said, I see them coming back just like they've stormed back every time we've had a down year, you know. I see it being just as good as they've always been.
As a great linebacker, what do you see in Garrett Wallow? Can he be another guy that gets drafted early in the draft next year?
Yeah, you know, Garrett was a guy that I loved when I was coaching there. I wanted him to come play linebacker forever, and he was still at safety, which was better for him because if you can play safety in that 4-2-5 defense, you can play pretty much any position. So it was better for him to learn that. And now that he is in the linebacker role, which is better suited for his body type and all that, but to me, he's going to be a special player. He plays kind of like every other great linebacker has ever played, which is that he only has one speed. You know, it's just go. You're going to have to tell him to slow down before you have to tell him to speed up, which that's one of those things you can't coach. And any player that has that is going to be special. And then when you add the athletic features he has, you add the brains he has, you're going to get a good, well-rounded linebacker. So I think Garrett's going to be one of the next good ones we're talking about.
I tend to agree. I'm a little biased. I love Garrett Wallow like a son, being a fellow Louisiana boy. All right, Jason, we appreciate you coming on. Do you have anything else you want to try and promote or anything going on in your life you want to kind of shout out right now?
No, I would. You guys might be able to help me out with this, and I don't know if it's still true. I don't even know if it was true when I was playing, but somebody told me after I got all-conference in the Mountain West for that 4th year in a row that I was the only defensive player in Mountain West Conference history to get that. Can you guys check that fact for me and let me know?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll definitely do some research on that and shoot you a text later.
I'm throwing that out to people when I'm bragging about
myself. I'll do some research and hit you up later, all right?
Oh, that's awesome, bud.
All right, appreciate you, Jason.
All right, man, you too.
Thanks. Jason Phillips, everybody, one of the greats in TCU history.
One of the best to ever do it.
Like, me and him were at school the same time. He got there in 04, I got there in 04. He finished in 09, I finished in 09. So, very familiar trajectory. Always had some good time when I'm talking to Jason. So,
yes.
Good fella.
And very, very deserving of that best 39 of all time. There's some honorable mentions in there, which we'll go over.
We'll get to this later.
But he's definitely deserving.
I like how we should find, I don't know. I don't know if we can make a trophy or not, but like every number, we should get like the number candles and like just send them to the guys.
We should. Like birthday candles?
Yeah. That should be what we do.
We're going to have to pay a lot in shipping. But
yeah.
Maybe we could crowdsource this.
We can find something like that. If you've got any extra numbered candles laying around, let us know. We'll figure it out.
You could like make little medals out of yogurt lids.
Yes.
And Sharpie the number on it.
Be like an office situation. Yeah, you succeeded or whatever. So we'll get into the rest of the 30s later, a little bit later in the show. First things first, as we jumped right into the interview, how was your week been, Clint?
Man, you know, it's been good. Life continues apace. Today I was paying bills, so that was fun.
Was it actually fun or no?
No, of course not. Okay. Paying bills is horrible. This is the worst day of the month.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, just things actually going good in work. I mean, this is a TCU podcast, not that anyone cares, but
this is part of your work.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's true. Yeah. But I mean,
I'll pay you today. I should do that, but I'm just saying.
Thank you, Billy.
I mean, I haven't really worked in like 2 months, but I'll get some shekels for you.
The construction matting business is heating up.
There you go.
Coach P would say
that's good.
That's good.
Good to hear. So we're gonna get into the list here in a little bit later on. First things first, we'll talk about the rest of the guys that went in the draft and kind of because obviously we recorded last week's show on Friday, talked to Colin Jones. If you haven't listened to that yet, go back and listen to that. Mm-hmm. But that was before Ross Blacklaw got taken 40th overall by the Houston Texans. It's a good fit. He's going to play with J.J. Watt.
Oh, what an excellent fit. I mean, I feel like probably he's going to have such an amazing rookie year that Bill O'Brien will trade him away for 2 6th-round picks and a chicken wing. But it's very cool. It's very cool, first of all, to see the full circle of – you know, us beating J.J. Watt in the Rose Bowl, and now we have this defensive lineman who idolized J.J. Watt and is going to go play with him. Very cool full circle moment. And, I mean, we've said ad nauseum how we feel like he's, out of everybody in this class, he's going to have the longest career, be really successful. And, I mean, that's a great fit for him on that Texans D-line.
Bill O'Brien did something right this offseason. How about that? What do you know? What are the odds, huh?
Yeah.
So he went there, and then Lucas Niang gets picked up by the defending national champions.
World champions. Kansas
City Chiefs. National, world, global, galaxial, Milky Way,
yes,
whatever. The Super Bowl champions.
That's Kansas the steal of the draft, man.
Yeah.
That is the steal of the draft. And what a place for him to land.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, blocking for Pat Mahomes and that offense, and geez, that is just a value pick right there.
And they bring back pretty much everybody, too. So he doesn't get
no graduations for the Chiefs.
No, they lost two starters, and one I think is their punter. So it's not like it's like they're pretty much just coming back for more.
Yeah.
So they'll be fun to watch this year. But Niang, I don't think he's going to get pressured into starting right away. He's the kind of guy I think that can maybe use a little bit of the extra seasoning. Not that he needs a lot of it, but coming off the hip surgery, maybe they lose a guy next year, because I was on a KC radio show earlier this week, and I was talking about how, well, the rent's got to come due on Pat Mahomes here soon, so go to the cheaper guy that you just picked up instead of having to re-sign a lineman that you already got. So,
for sure.
So he's a guy that I think maybe not this year gets a lot of playing time, but hopefully the next couple years.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the surprise of the draft.
Surprised me, and I've
huge surprise.
Been more glowing about this player than anyone else I can recall.
Yes.
Yes. Vernon Scott, taken by the Packers. Did not see that coming.
Did not see it coming at all. I mean, when I jokingly put out my best still available list that blew up for some reason.
Well, because you forgot.
I forgot Cordell Owagwu. And I was feeling so bad about that. And Vernon Scott did not even enter my mind for some reason. But, man, what an awesome opportunity for him. And dude's insanely athletic and was a huge piece of that great secondary. So why the heck not? Why wouldn't he get drafted? Way to go, Packers.
What's funny is, like, a year ago when I was talking about this time, oh, they're going to have 10 frogs drafted this year.
Yeah.
He wasn't even one of the ones that I named.
He wasn't. I
was so off. Like, I was so very off on this.
Oh, man.
But, no, again, if you go back to the show 4 years ago, Vernon Scott was my two-star special. Told you he'd do star that would blow up. He was my guy. And then he finally got to play his junior and senior year, and I got drafted by the Packers.
Yeah.
I didn't see that coming, but it's going to be fun to watch.
That, my friends, is a two-star special. Absolutely.
for sure. I mean, he's not going to help Aaron Rodgers out, but we'll see.
Oh, man, I love the gifts of...
I can't believe what they did.
Yeah, like every time they're like not drafting a weapon for Aaron Rodgers, and people were tweeting the gif of him like throwing the iPad.
Yeah.
And they'd be like, what the F?
Yeah, every time. Like, it's a lot of people, in being a Saints fan, for most of this decade, the Saints had a terrible defense.
Mm-hmm.
And it held Drew Brees down, but also helped him put up all these crazy numbers.
Yeah.
But, like, it's criminal, like, how they treated Aaron Rodgers.
It really is.
This last decade. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. And meanwhile, you asked me last week how I was feeling about the CeeDee Lamb pick. In retrospect now, looking at our full draft, oh man, I give the Cowboys an A+.
Cowboys crushed it. I have to admit it. The Cowboys crushed it.
Man, Jerry should draft from his yacht every single year, man.
He still might. I would if I were him. I would never leave that thing.
And we got two of the best undrafted free agent signings of the whole dang bunch, man. Shaywo and Jet.
You got the whole
staying at home in Dallas. Oh, man, I'm so excited about that.
I was on a radio show in Waco yesterday asking me which of these undrafted guys I think will stick. And I said Shaywo because he's going to move to fullback.
Yeah.
And we'll get into the other three guys in a second. But is that a fair assessment, you think? He's got a shot at making the roster?
Oh, yeah. I think Shaywo will definitely make the roster, because also he's so athletic and he's so multiple. You can plug him in multiple places. And if you have a creative enough offensive coordinator who wants to use a fullback, I mean, you can do the dump to the fullback at the goal line.
He's got hands. He's shown it.
But you could also, I mean...
You can throw passes.
Yeah. Well, probably. But, I mean, you could line him up at tight end. You could line him up as a running back. I mean, when you have Zeke banging, you don't necessarily need, quote, power back there. But, and honestly, Jet, if you want to make a... I mean, Tony Pollard's a great backup running back. You can really, truly have a three-headed monster with Jet back there as well. I think those are two really, really great fits for
I think Shaywo probably makes it. I don't know about Darius. That's a crowded room
it's
with
very
Pollard
crowded.
And although you can't really move him to slot either because you have CeeDee Lamb now.
But here's the thing. With running backs, I don't have any problem. I mean,
you're a knee injury away from
You're one play away at any position, but especially at running back, you're one play away from being out permanently.
Yeah.
You know, much less for the season. So I think it's worth having a guy back there who's in that kind of Tony Pollard type role, very similar athletically, Man, though, I'm real excited about it. I'm really excited about
it. I think Shewa's going to stick. So get your Cowboys 34, whatever jersey they're going to put him in.
Yeah.
So I don't know. We'll see. Probably
I did see that CeeDee Lamb is officially wearing 88.
How does that make you feel?
I mean, I love that the 88 has kind of become like a rite of passage. Yeah. I don't know. He didn't seem very excited to wear 88 at first, so that's kind of weird.
What was he? Was he like 14 or something? He was like in the teens, right?
He wanted to wear like 11 or 10 or something like that. Yeah. But
is it Amari Cooper 10 or something? Is he
19?
19. Okay. Yeah. Well, whatever.
Yeah.
But like,
It is weird to not have the theoretically the best receiver on your team be wearing 88. That's very weird.
Well, no. Well, if you look now, most receivers, the best receivers, are wearing numbers in the teens.
No, but I'm saying for the Cowboys. If you're going to be like, hey, this is our hallowed number. This is Drew Pearson, Michael Irvin, Dez Bryant, and we're going to give it to our technically third guy on the depth chart who's a slot. Yeah. You know? Yeah. I mean,
Yeah, no, it's
not weird. That CeeDee Lamb isn't talented.
I don't get how they haven't retired them. I guess they don't retire numbers, do they?
Well, I think Bob Lilly's number's retired.
Is that like one of like three? They don't retire a whole lot of numbers.
74, I'm 99% positive, is retired.
Larry Allen, is that right?
Nope. Well, 74 is Bob Lilly.
Oh, okay.
And I don't know. Is Troy Aikman's number retired? I don't remember any eights.
I know they have the Ring of Honor. I don't know if they retire numbers per se, but they have that Ring of Honor.
I think Bob Lilly is one of very few, if not the only, that is retired.
Yeah. Other guys that went undrafted for the Frogs, Trey Heights to Carolina, another one that surprised me a little bit.
Yeah.
But he's a guy that, when he was healthy, played a lot of special teams, too.
Yeah, he'll stick to special teams.
So I think that's his route to making the roster there, is going to be being a star on special teams.
And clearly, from these last 2 weeks of interviews, we've got a good track record of special teamers at Carolina.
Yes, yes. I didn't even put that together. I guess we could have asked if he was there with Colin Jones. I guess he was.
Yeah, they probably did overlap a little bit.
Because he was in Carolina. Jason was there in 11 and 12.
Yeah, if he was there Jones when Johnny Manziel was getting drafted, that was after Colin came out. So, yeah, they would have overlapped.
Yeah, they would have overlapped a little bit. We should ask him about that. Yeah. Oh, well, I'll just call him back. Mm. but Trey Heights got a shot as a special teams guy in Carolina. Anthony McKinney to Tennessee. That's a great offensive line. They like to run the ball. So maybe it works.
With a guy like Anthony McKinney, I mean, I've probably ragged on him a little more than I should on this podcast.
Yeah, everyone else has. I mean, why not? He came in with a ton of hype and a ton of pedigree, if you will. Because we thought, oh my gosh, this guy's a giant. He was a wrestler. He's gonna come in and play right away and be a star. And he never quite fulfilled that. He was better than we give him credit for.
Serviceable.
But he was not the star we all thought he'd be.
Well, and, what I was going to say about it is when you got a dude with that kind of size and mass to him, like, there's no harm in taking a flyer on him. Because if we think back, I mean, Teo Fabuleje was he was good at TCU. Yeah. He was not a star.
No.
But he got drafted by the Bears and had, you know, a few decent years in the pros. So when you've got that kind of size, there's no reason
to give him 6'8". 380 or whatever. He was like Mekhi Becton without all the skill.
Yeah.
So it's just what he was.
With twice as many stints at BYU.
Yes, that's true. Man, that guy's back and forth is a crazy story.
It really is.
And then Cordell Owagu going to be joining Ross Blacklock down in Houston. I think that's a good pickup too. I think Bill O'Brien, and once he got DeAndre Hopkins out of his hair, he was able to get some good work done.
I guess. He just was able to think clearly then, I suppose.
I still can't believe that trade happened. But anyway, Houston's got a couple frogs. Dallas has a couple frogs. Come frogs stay close to home. So that's good to have.
Ross was, if I remember correctly, the first ever TCU player drafted by the Houston Texans. If I remember correctly. I think I saw Mark Cohen tweet that stat.
Well, they got revitalized in 2001 or whatever.
Yeah, like 2001 or two.
It's
believable. And then, I mean, it feels like it's been forever since a TCU player has stuck with the Cowboys. I know we had like David Porter got invited to camp and was briefly there, and Stephen Hodge was briefly there. But yeah, if Shewo or Jet, but most likely Shewo, if he can stick, that'll be the first, you know, true TCU player Cowboys fans will have to root for in a long time. Yeah. Since probably Larry Brown, just off the top of my head.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree, unless we're missing somebody. I don't think we are.
Oh, but we know what we should talk about, speaking of missing things.
Sure.
Is His Highness Andy Dalton, released by the Cincinnati Bengals.
Missing him
today.
Already. Where do you think he goes? I think the most logical place is New England, but
yeah.
they have no money.
Like, Frogs of War posed the question, and I said Bill Belichick has entered the chat.
Yeah,
it seems like. Well, and plus, you know, as someone who is obviously has such a soft spot for Andy and loves Andy, like we all do. You really would love to see, as much as I hate the Patriots, you'd much rather see him go to the Patriots than the Jaguars, which is the other main landing spot people are talking about.
I don't know why the Jaguars will take him. I think Jaguars are fully all in on tanking for Trevor. They seem to be poised and to go that direction, unless Gardner Minshew lights the world on fire again.
Yeah, I guess he could. But yeah, the Pats seem like such an obvious landing spot. And I mean, I don't know what their cap situation looks like, but mm-hmm. you'd have to think that, I mean, Andy's not going to go in there like Dak demanding like 30 plus million. No. You know.
What's crazy is Jameis Winston was asking for 30 million from the Buccaneers, and he's getting 1.1 with the Saints.
The Saints are like, you will take this.
You'll take it. Go sit here, enjoy all the crab legs you want here in Louisiana, and go forth. I'm sure the Patriots can find $1.1 million to give to Andy Dalton.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure. It's somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously you want to get paid what you're worth, but I wouldn't imagine Andy would, especially if Andy's going to a place where he's like, hey, I got a chance to compete for a Super Bowl here.
Yeah.
He'd probably be willing to, you know, he's not going to go in asking for a king's ransom, I wouldn't think.
He made $16.2 million this year. He signed a $96 million deal 6 years ago. He's not hurting, per se.
Yeah.
he's not hurting for money. So taking a one-year deal, this cutting him did cost him $17 million this year. That stinks. No, man. That's what he would have gotten.
Yeesh. But how cool would it be to see him and Marcus Cannon together again?
Yeah. That'd be really awesome. It would be awesome. And they have another.
And is Marshall still with the Patriots, Marshall too? Nails, yeah, Marshall, too. There you go.
So you can get the whole squad back together.
Yeah. Get the band back together again.
They can go pick up Colin Jones. It'd be just like the good old days.
Yeah. There we go. Now we got a plan. Yeah. That is the formula of turning me into a temporary Patriots fan. Let me tell you what.
Call Robert Kraft. Tell him what's up. Get Bill Belichick's dog on the line. Don't do that. My dog will freak out. Babs will go crazy. Let's see.
That was the star of the draft, was Bill Belichick's 100%, dog.
100%. I thought it went very smooth. The whole thing went super smooth.
It was amazing. Yeah. I was like, can we do this every year? Like, it was so efficient, and we had Roger Goodell to laugh at as he got progressively more exhausted.
Just sitting there, like an old man in the chair, eating his M&Ms. Yes. No, that was fun.
Did you notice, too, somebody pointed out on Twitter that in between picks, he had a Mike Ditka bobblehead by his TV that was moving.
I saw it on Twitter. I didn't notice it. We're like,
why is he rotating his Mike Ditka bobblehead? Hey,
he's
having fun.
He's making no dollars this year.
Literally. He didn't look like he was having fun. Well, no, he looked like he was having fun for like the first few picks, and then he was like, I'm over this.
Well, normally he just does round one, then he kind of pieces out, and they let teams legends go call the picks and whatever.
Yeah,
but no, it was a good experience. A bunch of frogs got taken, so it was worth watching. So,
by the time he was near the end, you know, and he was slouching back in that chair, it looked like he was gonna be like. And the whatever pick, and you know I never loved your mother either.
Have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year too. Yeah,
read your own bedtime story.
So that was some fun frog action to watch this week, and we also had a very fun Zoom interview with Gary Patterson of the day. There were 28 of us on this. I'd never done Zoom before. And I will point
welcome
out.
Welcome to the future.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I'm gonna dust off my what's the thing with the calculator that the old people used to use.
A calculator?
Well, but no, but like with the little sliding things. Abacus.
Oh, abacus.
Yeah,
yes.
I had to dust off my abacus and join the 21st century. Mm-hmm. So it was fun being on there with seeing everyone's faces for the most part on Zoom at some point. Talking to GP for an hour. Anything that he say or notice that you saw maybe sticks out to you, or like he's very much expecting the season to happen this year.
Mm-hmm. I was gleeful over one of his answers to Shahan Jayaraja, who we have brought up on the podcast before.
Yes.
When Shahan asked something to the effect of, you know, like what's it going to look like with Jerry Kill on the staff? How's that going to work in practice? And Coach B with a very Coach P answer, that's for me to know and you to find out.
Yeah.
Yes. And I was like, yes!
I got a chuckle out of
yes!
that.
So, I love yes. it.
The Baylor apologist. Got his thing. And I was surprised. The question I asked was about Ross Blacklock, or was about, I was trying to get it as O'Shawn, a kind of guy that could leave early. Like, I don't see it per se right now, but talking about Ross Blacklock left early, went to the second round. GP said he thought he'd be a top 10 or 15 pick in next year's draft
if he stayed one more
stuck
year.
Around. So, surprised me a little bit. So, do you think it's hard to say turn down the money now when you're getting this money? And we all thought Ross Blacklock would be a top 15 or not top 50, top 20, 25 pick.
Hindsight's 20/20, you know. And like going into draft day, my inclination would have been Jalen Reagor should have stayed another year. Ross Blacklock was good to go. Ends up that they got flipped.
Yeah.
You know, and that Jalen Reagor got taken a little higher and Ross Blacklock got taken a little lower. But, you know, when you've got, I mean, here's the thing. You can't do in football like you do in NBA where you can kind of test the waters. Mm-hmm. You know, if you've got a chance to go as a first round pick, take the money, you know? Like, why the heck not?
Yeah.
And they both had very clear pathways to being picked as a first rounder. Ross was, I mean, you know, this close as I hold my fingers very closely together.
Yeah.
So... I don't think it was the wrong choice necessarily. As also, a TCU fan, I would have loved that
instead. Well, he's coming off an Achilles injury. That's something that if you one more tweak, you blow that out and your career's over.
Yeah.
So go get the money. I have no problem with them going. I have no problem with anybody getting their paid early. So
yeah.
And then GP talked about Shaywo, how impressive he's been with Shaywo and how he thinks he can stick with the Cowboys.
Mm-hmm.
So
and Coach B's dropping an album. That's exciting too.
Yes. He apparently songs he had written like over the last 30 years that are getting modernized and they've been sent off to the studio. They're getting recorded and maybe they'll come out soon. He invited all of us on the Zoom to go to whenever bars reopen to go to a bar and listen to it. So,
Purple Menace live show. It's happening.
100%. So, I was asked on one of the shows this week, if you get a sneak peek, let us know. I was like, I'll let you know what it's like. So we'll see how that goes. And I don't know if it's songs that he's just written or if he's performing them or how this is going.
Yeah, I would assume if he's dropping an album, it's probably not going to be many covers. But
no, but I mean, is the album entirely? Is he performing the songs? Or is it just songs that he wrote? Because I don't know if he was necessarily.
I'm sure he's performing.
I'm sure he's performing some of them for sure. There's songs, but again, he sent them to somebody to get modernized. So I don't know if he was singing about Abacus or whatnot.
Modernized was his words.
That's what he said. Yeah.
Maybe it's gonna be Coach P with some auto tune like T-Pain style.
My God, I hope so. That'd be so funny. I didn't even think about that. That was hilarious. Talking about how he's preparing for the season, he's making sure the kids are prepared academically because this is supposed to be this coming week is finals week. This should be dead days right now. And then
are they still doing finals?
They'd be next week, I think.
They would be, but are they still doing them like with online?
Virtually,
classes?
I guess. Yeah. I don't know. People just have that window open and Wikipedia open and side by side. So
yeah, that's true.
Well, I think they went everything pass fail this year, so it's like. Nothing goes for or against your GPA. If I remember how that works, I don't know.
Yeah, I know that a couple of my friends who are high school and middle school teachers they've been told a similar thing where it's like you can't change a kid's grade.
Yeah.
Basically, it's like, okay, so what are we even doing?
Yeah, no, it's I don't know. Everyone is passing everything. It's a wild time. It's something we've never experienced before. And GP is preparing for practice as if he's going to get the full month to prepare. He's going to get 2 weeks to prepare. It was interesting. He said he was going through like all 20 plus years of his material as a coach for practices to see what they might be able to put together for this. So it's an interesting time. I don't know how this is going to look. Not a clue. It sounds like according to today, TCU's thrown their name in the hat as far as schools that they think will be open. A&M and Tech, I think, said they're planning on opening August 1st or whatever. Mm. And TCU, I think, said the first day of classes are still scheduled to be August 23rd. It's not doing anything rash.
Yeah. Well, and I know a lot of schools have basically said, like, listen, we need to play this football season, whether students on campus or not.
Yeah.
Like, because we need the revenue money. Yeah, TV from
money.
It.
You don't get as much money without the bodies in the stadium, but...
Well, and Coach P had a good point. It's like, when have we not begun football season without students on campus?
Yep.
Like,
really
I mean, as someone who is an equipment manager, like, my school year started in, like, late July every single year, like, a solid month before everyone else's did. Like, that's how it goes. So what difference does it make if we start playing some games, like, if people aren't on campus? I mean, who cares?
Yeah. No, It hurts people that want to tailgate.
Yeah.
But
you can grill in the backyard.
At this point,
drink at your house.
I'm just dying to watch something new on TV.
Oh, I know it.
Like, again, I told you I was watching the Sunderland Till I Die on Netflix. I didn't know what happened. I had no clue about relegation, about any of that stuff.
Yeah. Oh, you didn't know about that?
Well, I knew it existed, but I didn't know how it affected teams and whatnot.
Because
they got relegated back-to-back years.
Oh, man.
They got sent from Premier to Champions, then to Tier 1 or whatever.
I really might need to watch that show.
It's I think, 14 episodes. It's a pretty quick go-through, about 45 minutes to an hour long. It's interesting. It's kind of like Hard Knocks.
Yeah, but is it like, as someone who's like, you know, only a peripheral soccer fan, like I get interested at World Cup time and then I cannot get invested otherwise?
I'm the same way.
Okay, but it was still good?
Because it's a lot more about it's a lot about the business side of it, making trades, the transfer window, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Me sounding so educated now because I watched this show.
Wow.
I don't know. It's, like I said, it's 14 episodes. It's two seasons, 14 episodes, covers their 17 and 18 seasons.
Yeah, and you hear a lot of Cockney accents, so that's fine.
The entire show, everyone's British. It's adorable. Like, we're going to go play in Wembley. Yay! Like, I was like, oh, it's adorable. But yeah, I mean, it's 14 episodes. Like I said, you can burn through it in a weekend if you really want to.
Man, you know what I just watched over the last 2 days while I was working, you know, just to take a complete rabbit trail, is the show Waco.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if this is embarrassing or not. Me and my girlfriend binged that in a day.
Really?
Yes.
I probably could have, honestly.
Yeah, I think it was only 6 episodes.
Yeah, it was pretty short, but yeah. It was, man. I mean, you know, I knew a fair deal about the whole Branch Davidian thing and the Waco Siege, but, like, it was really well done, I think, the way they did the show, mm-hmm. and so tragic.
Oh, crazy bad ending. Like, I thought there was just, like, again, I grew up an hour away from there. Mm-hmm. I thought it was, Waco, just a bunch of crazy people. But, like, these, like, they didn't seem to be based on the show anyway, which, again, it's sort of based on the book written by one of the survivors.
Right.
So it's going to paint them maybe a little better. But it's also got some input from the chief negotiator, too, that's still alive. So, I don't know. I think it's interesting and obviously crazy sad ending. Like,
yeah, oh, yeah.
And it was not what
Spoiler alert.
It's not how I thought it ended, actually. I thought it was
Did you not know about the fire?
No, I did, but I thought it was more of a firefight between
U.S.
And it was just their house burns.
Spoiler. No. And, you know, quite frankly, F the feds, right?
Like, everyone's libertarian now, so it's going that way.
I mean, but, oh, God. I mean, like, you know, I'm like, listen. David Koresh, he was a charlatan. He was a heretic, as far as I'm concerned. Not a particularly good guy, being like, you know, hey, I'm going to take on the burden of sex with all of your wives.
That line cracked me up.
Oh, and by the way, from Friday Night Lights, the guy who played David Koresh.
Taylor Kitsch.
Yeah.
No, I tell you what, I've only seen one season of Friday Night Lights, but Taylor Kitsch has popped up in a bunch of other things that I like season two of. What's the HBO True Detective?
Oh.
Of season two of True Detective, and that ruined the whole series. Everything he touches is terrible.
Really?
Except when he plays dumb guys from Texas.
He did good in Waco. I thought he did.
That's what
good.
I'm saying. Dumb guys from Texas.
Okay, yeah. That's fair.
So he nailed Friday Night Lights and he nailed Waco. Everything else he's touched has been terrible.
That's
like,
very fair.
The biggest bomb in Disney history was John Carter from Mars.
Yes.
He was John Carter. Bomb.
Yeah, I did not even see that.
Terrible.
But yeah, just, you know, completely, just the whole. That whole Justice Department, and you know, that this could get political really fast, but just the ATF had no business being there.
No.
Like, leave these people alone.
Yeah, not saying they were
this
right,
is not
but they
federal
were,
jurisdiction.
No, like, they're not saying they were right in any capacity, but they didn't deserve what they got.
Oh, absolutely. And so. Just, you know, I mean, wrongs on both sides for sure throughout the whole negotiation, but seriously, like, you're going to put in, it's like that radio host is talking about against spoilers, but it's like there's all these instances of tear gas catching on fire within these siege situations, and it's like the feds didn't think for a second, like, oh, we're collapsing these walls and trapping them inside, and you know, this tear gas is gonna light on fire.
No,
like,
yeah, it was a mess up by, but
pretty
again,
terrible.
To be fair, he said he'd leave when
that's the thing, he when, said when he'd they, leave and he didn't
when they when they put that hour long special on TV or whatever. Yeah, didn't do it. So,
didn't do it.
So I get it. It's everyone's wrong.
Yeah,
but
everyone's wrong.
Everyone's wrong, but it is what
except
it is.
For the Michael Shannon character. I like that guy.
No, well, that's he's the guy that wrote like helped contribute to the show or whatever.
Yeah.
So, all right. So you want to get into the list?
Back to TCU Athletics.
Well, yeah. Because like speaking of things that burned in Waco are now better.
Yes.
That's not a good segue. Well, TCU's better.
The Branch Davidians are better than ever.
Are they? Or is that in there?
You know, they went down to a lower conference for a while.
Yeah, they got relegated.
Yeah. And yes. But now they fought their way.
Now they're coming back up. They're fighting the Catholics later. I don't know how this works. I don't know.
They're fighting the Catholics. Oh, as I'm trying to open up my note, looks like we have some possible breaking news.
Oh, what you got?
I see Deion Silas. I don't know if you know anything about this kid, but just said that he received an offer. He's blessed to receive an offer from Texas Christian University.
Why is it the same one? No, it's a different one, because I just retweeted Caden Saunders.
3-star running back at Iowa State University, he says.
Oh,
so I don't know if he's committed.
Maybe he's already
to Iowa
committed.
State.
I don't know anything about him.
Yeah, it looks like he's a high schooler who's committed.
Oh, yeah. Well, trying to go snake him from the competition. That's fine.
Yeah. Okay.
This Caden Saunders kid's out of Columbus, Ohio, 4-star receiver. They're trying to pull out of there. So it's hard to get. I'm assuming it's real hard to get a kid to leave Columbus, Ohio, considering that's Ohio State's country.
But. Yeah. Delicious. Okay. So when last we left our heroes of the numbers, we were entering into the 30s.
Into the 30s.
As you recall from our interview with the best 39 of all time. So, number 31. We got a couple of honorable mentions for you. I think Ridwan Issahaku deserves some honorable mention. Solid safety of the last couple years. Jarek Suter. designated hitter for the baseball team, who actually started as a football player. He was going to be a two-sport guy. Yeah. But your best 31 of all time, TCU's first ever All-American defensive end, Rags Matthews.
Tell me more about Rags Matthews, because I don't know anything about him.
Well, he was quite the fearsome fellow in the 1920s, let me tell you.
Fearsome fellow.
Yeah, he was. And TCU's first ever consensus, well, he was a consensus All-American, but he was also just first ever All-American. And let me go back to my notes.
He played offense and defense in the 20s.
Well, yeah, because everyone played both sides.
Yeah, that's true. MVP, he was the team MVP in 26 and 27. Played in the East-West Shrine Game. It was the first year that Southwest Conference players were included there.
So. He was a famous trash talker, actually, from 1925 to 1927.
You ragamuffin, you.
Basically.
Rapscallion.
Yeah, well, there is a story that Dan Jenkins I have here that it was from one time that the Frogs were playing A&M. And it says, prior to a Matthews-led goal line stand to preserve a scoreless tie with undefeated A&M, Matthews hollered at the Aggie huddle, "Y'all got the guts to run my way?" And they did, and he stopped them. So there you go.
There you go.
It ain't trash talking if you can back it up.
It's adorable. It's adorable trash talk from the 20s.
Yes.
The good old days.
Y'all got the guts.
I fit well in the 20s.
Yeah. Then he went in Charleston, and he went to a speakeasy. You know, the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, did you have more thoughts on Rags
Matthews? No. I just learned so much about Rags Matthews.
Rags McMuffin.
I don't know.
Dirty Rags Matthews.
Dirty Rags.
Okay, number 32. So, we've got Clyde Flowers, mm-hmm. who is a linebacker for the Frogs, another All-Southwest Conference guy. Kevin Langford.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember Kevin Langford,
Billion? Kevin Langford.
Yes, he was a pretty solid post for the Frogs in the mid-2000s.
Yeah.
Not particularly good teams that he played on, but he was. I want to say he hit 1,000 points. Do you remember that? If that was the case, probably. I feel like it was. But your best 32 of all time, and not a lot of competition here as we begin to get into these numbers where there's lots and lots of linebackers here with the 30s, 40s, and 50s.
Kevin Langford's still playing in Finland, by the way.
Oh,
fun fact.
Well, all right.
I had no idea.
Good for him. Bundle up. Traven Howard is your best 32 of all time. Fair, Billy?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Compared to Kevin Langford,
yeah.
Well, no, he was the what at, for? Is he still the all-time tackle leader?
I think he is.
I can't remember with him, Ty Summers, how that all unfolded.
Yeah, him and Ty were right neck and neck.
Yeah, and I think he finished on top, unless Ty passed him. I don't remember who was last.
Who was last?
Like who left the team latest?
Oh, Ty Summers was on the team longer because Ty's senior year was 2018.
Okay, so I think Ty might have passed him.
Yeah, but if he did, he getting pretty close.
Well, yeah, they're two of the best linebackers in TCU history, and easy to say that about Traven Howard. So, yeah, he's one of the best.
Yeah, one of the best to do it. 33 now. So, a couple honorable mentions for you. George McLeod, actually, the first ever TCU basketball player to score 1,000 points, as we were mentioning about Kevin Langford. Robert Merrill.
Fun running back to watch.
Yes, very fun running back. Another running back for you, Shewa Wolanalua.
New Cowboy.
Yeah, another really great running back. Garland Green, TCU's resident slam dunk aficionado.
He's still playing overseas somewhere as well.
Dude, he was a cool dude.
He was on the Cavs camp last offseason. Like, he still gets invited to camps every once in a while.
Well, because his brother's still playing in the league,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Garland Green, an incredible dunker, if you've ever had an opportunity to watch any. Surely on YouTube some of his dunk highlights are.
I haven't checked, and don't call me Shirley.
Okay. Sorry, Billy.
I have two more honorable mentions.
Yeah, give me two more.
All right, so we got to give some love to Chris Gardner.
Oh,
Our fan favorite. Yes. Our very much friend of me and you and the podcast and all that stuff. Number 33 has to get some. So does Adrian Ross, basketball player.
Yes,
one of the best basketball players in school history.
Oh, and Chris Gardner, as we talk about Rags Matthews being such a great trash talker, if you go back and watch the Rose Bowl replay on a punt that we beautifully downed inside the 5-yard line for Wisconsin that Chris was kind of peripherally involved in.
Yeah, he was. It's like when a pass goes 20 yards over the receiver's head and the DB's waving off incomplete or whatever.
Chris was jawing at the Wisconsin fans and doing all. I mean, he's just having the time of his life.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, so. What was that? Oh my God. What was that reporter at that Broncos game that one time?
He was having the time of his life. Yes.
Okay, but your best 33 of all time.
It's easy.
Jaden Obergrom.
It's easy.
The greatest to ever kick it. for sure.
Yeah, I would say. I think for TCU history, I think so.
I mean, I think it's an absolute crime he didn't win the Lou Groza.
Him and Nick Brown, I think, is that those are going to be top two?
Well, I mean, Mike Reeder's the only Lou Groza winner we have from the late
90s. But Overcrum should have won it.
Well, yeah, he should have.
He had the most...
But I'm saying, if you're saying it's between him and Nick Brown, I think Mike Reeder deserves to be in the conversation.
But I think Overcrum, when he left, he had the most points in Big 12 history.
Yeah.
So...
Dude was absolutely ice cold.
I think the kid from Oklahoma, Siebert or whatever, has now passed him, but either way, I think Overcrum is near the tops as far as best kickers in Big 12 history, not just TCU, but
conference. Yeah. Good guy, great guy, has a kicking school now. Actually, I was hoping that we could talk to him as well on the podcast. I really wanted to just ask him, like, was there ever a time when you were, like, nervous about a kick? You know, because he certainly
game,
never looked
I think
like
the West Virginia game he was nervous.
You would think so, but like, inhuman.
I think there's the famous story what Boykin said to him was, like, hey, no matter what, we love you or whatever. It's like the last thing he said to him when he went out on the field.
Yeah.
I think that's the quote, something like that. And then he goes and nails, crushes it. So, yeah, no doubt. Well, the thing about Overcrum that I always found fascinating was, if it was beyond 40, money.
Yeah.
No doubt in my mind. Inside 30, though, I think most of his misses were real short ones.
I don't think I can't even recall a miss, though. I mean, you?
I think
I know he did.
I think he had a couple, but I bet they were all, like, within, like, 30 yards.
Like, probably,
I bet,
like from a hash, probably.
Probably, but it's just so weird being like, man, he is money anything beyond 40 yards. And you get real close. I remember it being a bit of an issue.
Yeah.
But now I want to look up his stats.
Though, I mean, when you also consider the fact that Jaden Overcrum, arguably the best kicker in TCU history, followed who he did. It was such a breath of fresh air.
Yeah. I can't remember his name.
I remember his name.
Doors McGee.
Yeah, I was just gonna try and not put a guy on blast. Okay,
I just remembered it.
But yes. You know, reason we lost the 2008 Utah game. Yes. Reason that we almost lost the Boise game.
He was actually. This is gonna blow you away. He was only 79 of 100 on field goals.
Really?
Yes.
For his career.
Extra points, he was 214.
What was he his senior year, though?
21 of 25.
Really?
Yeah. In 2015, yeah.
Man.
So those games never came down to field goals, though.
Right.
In 2014, 2015, they never came, except for
when the game was on the line. He was good.
No, I don't think he ever missed, like, an important one.
Yeah.
But I wish I could see yardage on these. He had 2 tackles. Huh. In 2015, I don't know. Maybe on the misses, maybe, or... Maybe they were blocked and he tackled the guy or whatever.
Dude's a dual threat.
Yeah, for real. But in a play.
Put him out at safety.
But yeah, so he had so many extra. He was 212 extra points or whatever he had. So it's he had a good.
Is that good?
Here's the final season. He was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. He was 11 of 12 from beyond 40. And 0 for 2 inside of 30.
His
senior year. Well, no, and then he ended up going 2, 3, 4. So he was like 6 of 8 from inside 30, and like 11 of 12 from beyond 40. There's some. So I was right. Like, he was money from beyond 40, and then when it's a chip shot, I was like, man, I don't really care anymore. This isn't as fun to me.
Yeah, the thrill is gone.
Yeah.
Well, Billy, on to perhaps your favorite number on this list.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of honorable mentions for 34 for you. Keith Flowers, another linebacker whose last name was Flowers for TCU, and he was actually an All-American linebacker for the Frogs. Also, Ed Wesley.
Yep.
One of my favorite dudes while I was there at TCU, an amazing running back. Also, Jake Arrieta, who was very close to getting this top spot.
No, he wasn't.
I mean, Jake Arrieta, he is an ace in the major leagues.
No. A was. B.
But, I mean, Billy, I'll let you do the honors of 34.
Kenrick Williams. Kenny Hustle. It has to be. Like, A, I gave him the nickname, of course, famously, very famously. The best thing I've ever done in my entire life, arguably. Let's create this nickname. They call him in the NBA still. It's on his Wikipedia page.
It's beautiful.
Kenny Hustle, Kenny Williams, easily the number 34 of all time. NIT champion, NIT MVP. Just the best to ever do it. I don't know. I mean, I guess Desmond Bane might arguably be the best ASU basketball player in school history, but I'm going Kenny Hustle on that one. Taking my boy.
Yeah. Got to do it.
Got to do it.
Alrighty, so moving on to 35. Really only had one honorable mention.
There's some
here.
Weird numbers in the mid 30s where it's like, all right, well, just this guy.
Yeah,
not a whole lot of success in the mid 30s. Huh?
Yeah, I mean, well, there is where it's like one guy who had a lot of success.
Yeah, but not a whole lot of the extras.
Yeah. I mean, for me, the honorable mention was Tanner Brock, although his career got cut short. Dude was an incredible talent while he was here, and like he was a guy who had just such a high ceiling.
Yeah,
and you know, it's makes it all the more tragic that his career had to get cut short. But your best 35 of all time, all Southwest Conference running back, Ross Montgomery, who actually, before the Frogs beat Texas in 2012, the last time the Frogs had won in Austin was in the late 1960s with Ross Montgomery as the running back. They actually rallied, they were 18 points down in the fourth quarter, and they ended up winning 24-17. Mostly because of Ross Montgomery's running. And Ross was quoted as saying, "I wasn't surprised that we rallied. That was Texas we were playing.
We were
going to rally in that game."
The smack talk's gotten better since the 20s.
we're improving in decades, and the trash talk improves a little bit as well. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Makes sense.
But there's your 35. 36, another running back. Yeah. I didn't even have an honorable mention here. Okay, and this dude, to me, just stands on his own. The greatest running back in TCU history, pre-LT. Pre-LT.
That sentence better not have a period.
Yeah. Pre-LT, Kenneth Davis. He was the engine of those unbelievable Frogs that Jim Wacker coached in the mid-80s. Unfortunately, I feel like we've talked about on the podcast before how his career was cut short.
Yep.
He got injured in the Blue Bonnet Bowl, big reason the Frogs lost. And he then ended up getting suspended in 1985 for taking money from boosters, but dude was an absolute beast on the field. I mean, he had speed, he had power, he ended up having a long career with the Buffalo Bills, went to all four of their Super Bowls with Thurman Thomas as his running back mate in the backfield, played for the Packers for a little while as well. Two-time consensus All-American for the Frogs. Really, really good player. Heisman, you know, not runner-up, but he got votes.
Got votes.
Yeah, so He was a really good one. Really good.
He was the fifth in Heisman voting that year.
Fifth.
Yeah, that's top five.
Yeah, and see, that's a sensible number to not get invited to New York, unlike, you know, fourth or third, whatever. Trey was.
I'm still laughing at he was fifth. Yeah, that's top five.
Yeah, that's top five.
I crack myself up. That's all that matters.
Well, you know, we do what we can. So, 37 now. Again, I didn't really have any honorable mentions that came to mind, but Kelvin Newton. Linebacker for the Frogs from 1977 to 1980. And he actually, at one time, was third all-time in assisted tackles. Interesting stat. 229 assisted tackles. And at one time, he was seventh in total tackles with 366. He was the top tackler on the 1979 team for TCU.
There you go.
It wasn't going to be Ross Evans. I could tell you that.
We probably dropped the name, huh?
Yeah. Hey, I wasn't saying it. I didn't say that the two were related to what I was talking about before. Anyway.
38.
Okay, now we get back into some more...
modern.
Some more honorable mentions here. Well, yeah, and a modern player. Tommy Joe Crutcher, who was a hugely successful running back for the Frogs in the 50s. He was... I want to say he was All-American. I think he was the Frogs' last All-American until Kenneth Davis, okay. If I remember correctly. Buddy Dyke, another really great Frog from the old days. Cotton Harrison. You know, again, these are names that mean nothing to you.
Names are good, yep.
But your best 38 of all time, we're going to go back to baseball here. It's been a little while since we've visited.
It's been a hot minute.
Baseball. Jason Coates, your best 38 of all time.
I agree with that. I like what he did here.
Yeah, okay.
Hot take. I like the way he played the game.
Jason Coates was good at baseball. You heard it here first, folks.
Breaking news, guys. No, I mean, first team All-Mountain West back in the day in what, 2012? We got drafted in the 29th round. It's crazy they have all these rounds. But he was, all-tournament team in the 4th regional, first team All-Mountain West in 2010, second team Mountain West in 2011, first team in 2012, academic all-conference guy as well. So he's he was one of the best players in those first teams that went to Omaha. So.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Worth mentioning, you know, your honorable mentions for 39 since we talked to the illustrious Jason Phillips earlier. Jason Goss deserves some honorable mention, a really, really solid corner for the Frogs in the early GP years. L.D. Meyer, who actually scored every single point in the first ever Cotton Bowl.
Huh.
Yes.
What were they, six?
He was an end and a kicker. And he, well, let me look.
The final score of that game?
Well, let me look it up again. Because I wrote that down and I didn't write down the final
score.
Some
more Jason Coates stats. I was looking up his thing. Sophomore year, he had 361 with 13 homers. I didn't realize that the year that they went in 2010. So he was a career 334 hitter, 33 bombs. Yeah.
Okay, so that Cotton Bowl that the Frogs beat Marquette actually in, was the score was 16-6, and L.D. Meyer, who was Dutch Meyer's son, who everyone on the team called Little Meyer, he ended up kicking a 33-yard field goal in the opening minutes, hauled in a 55-yard touchdown pass from Sammy Ball late in the first quarter, and booted the extra point, and caught an 18-yard scoring pass in the second quarter.
So, I guess he missed that extra point. Take it to 16.
I guess so. I guess he did.
That's how that math works. Does LD stand for Little Dutch?
Yeah, I assume so.
Oh, interesting.
I don't know. I don't have any confirmation of that. He was an all-conference second baseman, I can tell you that. And he was an all-conference end in 35. So another two-sport athlete.
There you go.
Yeah. Also, speaking of Dutch Meyer, the third greatest coach in TCU history, Abe Martin, when he played football... his number was 39.
Oh, there you go.
For TCU. So that, you know, we talked about Jamie Dixon, Schlossnagel.
Yep.
Abe Martin's number. Before he put on the suit and the fedora, he wore 39.
Oh, interesting.
So there you go. That brings us.
And I might have forgotten number 40 when I'm talking about who the top two players in TCU history are.
The top two players in TCU
history? Well, I was like, it's either Kenny Hussle or it's Desmond Bain. I kind of forgot a number 40 player here.
Oh, for basketball.
Yeah, for basketball.
Yeah, this guy was a little bit good.
Probably kind of a big deal.
So I got one honorable mention for you, James McFarland.
Great.
You know, very famous for that interception touchdown in the Peach Bowl,
yes.
Among other great things. You know, a great boot boy as well.
Yep.
Really solid defensive end. But your best 40 of all time, and again, you know, maybe your best basketball player in TCU history.
Probably. I think just because he was a star in the NBA for like 15 years.
Yeah, I was going to say for 50 years.
It's
Kurt Thomas, folks. And if you can imagine this, a TCU player, Kurt Thomas in the late 90s, or actually mid-90s, excuse me, led the nation in both points and rebounds.
Yeah.
Like, we're talking like, if ESPN was a big deal back then and like they blew out things the way they do now, like this is like a Zion type dude that would be, I mean, can you imagine? Like, a TCU basketball player getting that kind of hype?
I can't. He led the NCAA in scoring and rebounding with 28.9 points and 14.6 rebounds. He was the third player in the history of at the time to do this with Hank Gathers and Xavier McDonald from 90 to 95 was his career years. Taking 10th overall. I've seen some mock drafts where Desmond Bain's going in the first round, and that surprised me a little bit. But like the fact that Kurt Thomas went 10th overall, that blows my mind.
Yeah, really. I mean, he was All-American. He was All-Southwest Conference, obviously. He was the Southwest Conference Player of the Year his senior year in 95, Frogs last year in the conference. You know, it's so frustrating. We did so many great things in like 94, 95, and the Big 12 was like,
we want Baylor.
Yeah, like Ann Richards said we should take Baylor, so y'all go over there in the corner. All right, whatever.
Looking through his history of teams in the NBA, that was cracking me up. Because he was there for like 2 years.
Oh, yeah.
He's with the Knicks for seven there in the middle, but it's like the Heat, the Mavs, the Knicks for 7 years.
He was with the Mavs briefly?
From 97-98.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I forgot that.
Thomas's playing career in Dallas was short. He only played 5 games.
Okay. That's why I don't remember.
He had a stress fracture in his ankle. So he only played 5 years. That's funny. Or 5 games, sorry. So Heat, Mavs, Knicks, Suns for 2 years.
I remember the Suns.
Supersonics for a year, Spurs for a year, Bucks for a year, Bulls for a year, Trailblazers for a year, and then Knicks for a year to finish it.
Yeah, you gotta go back to the...
It's so funny.
Man, wow. But, yeah, definitely your best 40.
They retired his number a couple years ago, so.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah, I mean, gosh, if your number's retired, you got to be on the list.
Yeah. We'll get to another one next week if a number retired.
That's very true.
At least one.
Yes. Well, one and one, he was mentioned earlier in this list.
Ross Evans?
Yes, 37 is... No one is allowed to wear that number anymore.
It's bad luck.
It is cursed and evil.
It might be a bit too far.
Yeah.
I'm trying to see his salary from playing 18 years in the NBA.
Oh, man.
You want to take a guess? Career salary game, Kurt Thomas. Steal that from the Dan Patrick Show. Career salary game.
Man.
18 years in the NBA. Played for roughly 18 different teams.
So his total, how much money he made 18 years?
How much money he made total? The most he made in 1 year, I'll tell you, was $8
million. Okay, that's helpful.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's say he averaged $5 million a year.
Okay.
So 18 times 5 is You know, I have a journalism degree, so I'm gonna pull up my calculator.
You mess up your abacus too.
Yeah. So 90 million. We'll say.
So
90
it's
million.
It's less than that. It's 65.9.
Okay. That's more that. Than I've got. No, so.
Roughly 65.9 more than I have. Yes. Yeah. It's very high.
I think there's nothing to sneeze at. That's all I'm saying.
No problems with that amount of money. I wish I had some of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's your list of the best frogs to wear jerseys in the 30s this year.
Yeah. 31 to 40.
Next year, next week we'll do.
Next year?
Next
we'll
year.
See ya.
See you guys. Taking the rest off because of the Rona. 41 through 50 next week.
Yep,
you already got those on there. I can think of one that's a surefire Hall of Famer or a surefire retired number.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I will tell you, spoiler alert, one of these numbers is going to be our first female athlete
yep.
who is the greatest to ever wear said number.
Well, that kind of gives that
so
one away.
So chew on that.
For a lot of TCU fans.
I mean, some people may be able to think of it right away, but some may not.
Some may not. So that's it. No,
but that's not who we're interviewing. We got another fun interview lined up for next week.
We do. We have a really good one next week.
Yes.
If you thought Jason Phillips was really good.
Yeah. If you thought that was good, just
you're in for something special next week. No Twitter questions.
Not a single one.
The second time we've had zero.
No one loves us.
Well, I think people are just busy.
They're plumb out of questions.
And not much time. We just cover
they
all
aren't
so
busy.
Well.
Come on just, now.
That was a joke.
Okay.
That was a joke.
Y'all ain't busy. y'all can take some time to ask us some questions. Be creative.
Come up with something unique. Be like Brian Banks. I miss when Yellen Kay sent in questions. That may
I
be the
know. Where's Yellen Kay at?
Bayou City. Come on. I know where you're out there somewhere.
You know, I mean, now that I'm co-hosting, I can't help out in this.
I know. Game. Usually this is where we default to you.
Yeah.
Jeff Craig can submit questions, too.
Yeah. Y'all have all been put on notice. We have a list.
You're all on watch.
Y'all are all going to get your houses egged because toilet paper is too valuable
That's true. That's true. Clint, got anything you want to promote?
Follow me on Twitter, @Clint_Foster55.
I'm Billy West. Is at TC_Rivals. Talk to you guys next week.